Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fahim. I'm 15 years old and almost from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I go to school at MC Smith Middle School.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And other bookish things. And today we're going to talk specifically about books by and about Native Americans, because it is Native American Heritage Month here in the United States.
Or Turkey Month,
but there aren't many books written for teens about turkeys or tweens.
Yeah.
Or children.
There's some picture books.
Yes, you can read picture books.
But there actually aren't that many books about turkeys that are children's
YouTube
books. There are some YouTube videos. I have to say, I really do love wild turkeys. I have a fondness for them. Like when you see turkeys running across the road.
Yeah.
I'm like, you go, turkeys.
Once I was like, oh, there's a turkey. Good thing they can't fly. And my sister was like,
they can fly.
And I'm like, oh, God, they're going to come after me.
They don't look like they should be able to. But when they do, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
They're such big creatures, and then they fly, and it looks like they're working so hard.
Mm-hmm. It looks like they're, like, chickens that are flying, and they're like, whoa, what's that big chicken in the sky doing up there?
Chicken in the sky.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Wait, there's a natural
I just made it up. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to talk about turkeys, except for what we just did. But we have some books that we're going to read the descriptions to if you're interested in reading some Native American fiction this month. In honor of Native American Heritage Month.
Yeah.
Let me start off with one from Fahim.
So this book is called If I Ever Get Out of Here by Eric Gainsworth. So this book is about Louis Shue Blake. So he is used to the joys and difficulties of life on the Tuscarora Indian Reservation in 1975. The joking, the fireball games, the snow blowing through his roof. What he's not used to is white people being nice to him. People like George Enfield, whose family recently moved to town with the Air Force as the boys, connect through the mutual passion for music, especially the Beatles. Louis has to lie more and more to hide the reality of his family's poverty from George. He also has to deal with the vicious Evan Ranger, who makes Louis the special target of his wrath. But when everyone else is on Evan's side, how can he be defeated? And if George finds out the truth about Lewis's home, will he still be on his friend?
Do you think he will?
Probably. Hopefully.
That'd be really sad otherwise.
Yeah.
But sometimes life is sad, and sometimes books are sad.
I just feel like, oh, I'm so curious. I want to know what happens next. Tell me.
Yeah, that book's supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be one I get to this month. We'll see how much time I have. It's on my list of potential titles to read this month. Yeah. We have one from you, Lena.
It's called Hearts Unbroken by Cynthia Leach Smith. When Lewis Wolfie's first real boyfriend mocks and disrespects Native people in front of her, she breaks things off and dumps him over an email. It's her senior year anyway, and she'd rather spend her time with her family and friends and working on the school newspaper.
Yeah.
The editors pair her up with Joey Carews, the ambitious new photojournalist, and in no time, the paper's staff finds themselves with a major story to cover. The school musical director's inclusive approach casting The Wizard of Oz has been provoking backlash in their mostly white middle class Kansas town from the newly formed Parents Against Revisionist Theater to anonymous threats. Long-held prejudices are being laid bare and hostilities are spreading against teachers, parents, and students, especially the cast members at the center of the controversy, including Lou's little brother, who's playing the Tin Man. As tensions mount at school, so does a romance between Lou and Joey. But as she's learned, dating while Native can be difficult. In trying to protect her own heart, will Lou break Joey's? Oh my gosh, you'll never find out unless you'll read it.
I like that it starts off with her dumping her boyfriend because he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Why would you make fun of somebody's culture ever, let alone somebody that you supposedly care about? Come on.
Yeah. I don't really like if people do that. If people are like, haha, that Mexican people wear hats that are so big and long and they speak Spanish and they're not that good at English, like instead of saying tape they say tape, like that's just mean. English is the hardest language because like tape, tape, yep, that could be like don't judge anyone. I'm pretty sure they would even get it wrong if they were learning this language, so yeah.
Yeah, I often at the library meet people that are learning English, that English is their second language, and they often will say, I don't speak English very well. And I'm like, you speak English a lot better than I speak any other language. Like my Spanish language ability compared to a lot of people who speak English as their second language. It's like, and I've heard it's one of the hardest languages to learn. I mean, every language has its quirks and difficulties, but I've heard English is extra challenging.
Yeah, because tape, keep, cape, and also, especially reading. I want to learn Japanese, but they use symbols, not like upside down question marks that are longer than I should be or something.
I love upside down question marks, just saying.
Yeah.
It's a very good punctuation. I also like upside down exclamation marks.
Yeah.
It's nice to know when you start a sentence that it's a question or something exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that book sounds very good. I like the whole Wizard of Oz inclusive casting drama, too. Okay. I have one called Mapping the Interior by Stephen Graham Jones. I've heard this is a very scary novella. So the description is, walking through his own house at night, a 15-year-old thinks he sees another person stepping through a doorway. Instead of the people who could be there, his mother or his brother, the figure reminds him of his long-gone father, who died mysteriously before his family left the reservation. When he follows it, he discovers his house is bigger and deeper than he knew. The house is the kind of wrong place, where you can lose yourself and find things you'd rather not have. Over the course of a few nights, the boy tries to map out his house in an effort that puts his little brother in the worst danger and puts him in the position to save them at a terrible cost. Yeah. I've heard that's awesome. And it's really short. Mm. So I'm definitely reading that one this month. I love a good short story.
For some reason, that just reminded me of, like, the opening to Peppa Pig. Hi, I'm Peppa Pig. This is my brother George. This is Mommy Pig. This is Daddy Pig.
Why did that remind you of that?
I don't know. Bacon, I guess? Or the pig squishy on top of the thing.
Okay. Peppa Pig. Spine tingling. I mean, Peppa Pig is scary.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Because, yeah. And also, she likes bacon. She's a cannibal.
Okay. That is wrong.
This is scary.
All right. Fahim, do you have another one?
Yeah. It's called Trail of Lightning, The Sixth World by Rebecca Roanhorse. While most of the world has drowned beneath the sudden rising waters of a climate apocalypse, Danette, formerly the Navajo, our reservation has been reborn. The gods and heroes of legend walk the land, but so do the monsters. Maggie Hosek is a Danette, a monster hunter, a supernaturally gifted killer. When a small town needs help finding a missing girl, Maggie is their last best hope. But what Maggie uncovers about the monster is much more terrifying than anything she would imagine. Maggie reluctantly enlists the aid of Kay Arviso, an unconventional medicine man, and together they travel the Rez, unraveling clues from ancient legends, trading favors with tricksters, and battling dark witchcraft in a pitchfork world of deteriorating technology. As Maggie discovers the truth behind the killings, she will have to confront her past if she wants to survive. Welcome to the Sixth World. Yeah.
Cool. Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Little adventure.
Yeah.
What's your next one, Lena?
It's called Hashtag Not Your Princess, Voices of Native American Woman, edited by Charlie Boy. Whether looking back to a troubled past or welcoming a hopeful future, the powerful voices of indigenous women across North America resound in this book, in the same style as the best-selling Dreaming in Indian. Hashtag Not Your Princess presents an eclectic collection of poems, essays, interviews, and art combined to express the experience of being a Native woman. Stories of abuse, humiliation, and stereotyping are countered by the voices of passionate women making themselves heard and demanding change, sometimes angry, often reflective, but always strong. The women in this book will give teen readers insight into the lives of women who for so long have been virtually invisible.
Yeah, those books are great. Hashtag Not Your Princess and Dreaming in Indian, I think is what the other one was called that was mentioned in that description.
Yeah, I was Dreaming in Indian.
They're really interesting to read, as they have this nice mixture of art and like poetry and prose, and you know, it's all different contributors from different tribes, and yeah, it's really cool. Highly suggested. Okay, so this one actually I'm reading currently. It's called The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich, and it was the winner of the 2012 National Book Award. And this is the description. One Sunday in the spring of 1988, a woman living on a reservation in North Dakota is attacked. The details of the crime are slow to surface because Geraldine Coutts is traumatized and reluctant to relive or reveal what happened, either to the police or to her husband, Basil, and 13-year-old son, Joe. In one day, Joe's life is irrevocably transformed. He tries to heal his mother, but she will not leave her bed and slips into an abyss of solitude. Increasingly alone, Joe finds himself thrust prematurely into an adult world for which he is ill-prepared, while his father, a tribal judge, endeavors to wrest justice from a situation that defies his efforts. Joe becomes frustrated with the official investigation and sets out with his trusted friends Cappy, Zach, and Angus to get some answers of his own. Their quest takes them first to the Roundhouse, a sacred place and place of worship for the Ojibwe, and this is only the beginning. And it's so far so good. Louise Erdrich is a pretty acclaimed author in general, but also is well known as a Native American author. And I decided to read a book of hers this year, and that one was suggested by my mom as her favorite. And I have one more that I could mention because I know all three of us love graphic novels, comics. There's a collection of comics called This Place, 150 Years Retold, that I'm excited to read this year. And the description is, explore the past 150 years through the eyes of indigenous creators in this groundbreaking graphic novel anthology. Beautifully illustrated, these 10 stories are an emotional and enlightening journey through magic realism, serial killing, psychic battles, and time travel. See how indigenous peoples have survived a post-apocalyptic world since contact. I just love collections like that where it's all different artists and illustrators and writers, different stories, different themes. Very excited to read that one this month. Cool. So those are just a handful of books that one could check out if they're interested in reading some Native American fiction or nonfiction this month. Yep. In honor of Native American Heritage Month. We also have some poems we were going to share.
Oh, yeah.
That are written by Native American poets. Okay, I'll start with one by Joy Harjo, who's the new United States Poet Laureate. And she's a member of the Muskogee Creek Nation. And this one is called Perhaps the World Ends Here. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared, set on the table. So it has been since creation, and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Baby's teeth at the corners, they scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instructions on what it means to be human. We make men at it, we make women. At this table we gossip, we recall enemies and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down selves and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table and have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table, we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite. That's Perhaps the World Ends Here by Joy Harjo.
The poem that the poem is called Whose Mouth Do I Speak With? It's by Suzanne Rancourt. I can remember my father bringing home spruce gum. He worked in the woods and filled his pockets with golden chunks of pitch for children. He provided this special sacrament and would gather at his feet around his legs, dropping his lunchbox and his empty thermos rattled inside. Our skin would stick to Daddy's gluey clothing and would smell like Mama's pine salt. We had no money for store-bought gum, but that's all right. The spruce gum was so close to chewing ember, as though in our mouths we held the eyes of Coyote, and how many other children had fathers that placed on their innocent and anxious tongue the blood of tree.
It's nice.
The poem that I have is by Jennifer Forster. It's called Flight. As a child, I tossed all my imaginary friends out the window of a fast-moving train because I wanted to feel my fist break open as I freed them, as each of their bodies whipped against the sliding. There, inside snow, dispersed into wind, their little heads rolling across the yellow plains. because I believed they would return, but none have since, not even the ones I didn't love.
I like how visual that poem is, not being too long. I have a slightly longer one here. This one's called She Was Fed Turtle Soup, and it's by Lois Red Elk. The willows were turning green, slips of leaves pointing to one another in a slow tempo, soothing the air with whispers of coming water. Her feet were bare and the earth cool, while a loose hem feathered her ankles for her walk. Bracing on stems for the gradual pace to not disturb all the sleeping turtles, she wished for sunlight in a shade of green to hurry growth and to keep her hidden. How close could she lean into the memory of relatives who lived this life of damp shells and slow demeanor without alerting them of her intent? All of Grandma's voices were now shaking her sleepy mind and begging her return to answer the details of her dream. It was the call of tradition that signaled the next step to seal the new experience into her life basket. She will be served turtle's energy for her growth. Off of Grandma's favorite tree, a knot was cut and shaped into a bowl. Handles in the shape of young turtles were carved into the sides. Into the cottonwood bowl was poured the prepared soup with essence of memory from a life once lived. Thanking all that came before this earth life was her detailed prayer. A calling of all water animals to witness the taking of one energy to give to the energy of another. A child who passed the test of recalling ancient blood. Her heart will live with turtle strength. Her life will be long and purposefully directed. Her song will be like the cool breeze moving tall willows above eddies remembering motion. There's a little about this poem here from Lois Red Elk, which says, in the Dakota Lakota culture, the story of the turtle carries a life of longevity and purposeful living. We make turtle amulets out of deerskin and present them to new mothers who have female babies. The prayer and promise with the amulet is that the child will have a long, purpose-filled life. A small portion of the baby's dried umbilical cord, the last connection between the mother and baby, is sewn into the amulet and kept with the child's clothing. The prayer and knowledge is that the turtle spirit now cares for the child's spirit. Also, when the child matures and has their first dream, they are fed turtle soup. The dream is always good and reveals a lesson or purpose for the child. We celebrate with the child by telling them that the turtle spirit and energy in the soup is transferred into the child and will guide and protect the child in and through their dreams. So that's describing what the poem was about a little bit.
Yeah. This poem is called Carrying Our Words by Ophelia Zepeda. So this poem was like translated into English from Ophelia Zepeda's poem, but it was usually like a Native American language. Mm-hmm. So. We travel carrying our words. We arrive at the ocean. With our words, we are able to speak, or the sounds of thunderous waves. We speak of how majestic it is, of the ocean power that gives us songs. We sing of our respect and call it a relative. Yeah.
That's nice.
The poem that I have is called The Reservation. How do you sweep a dirt floor? How do you describe the blue face of death to a spirit you will someday dance with? First, a dirt floor cannot be dirty. Second, her face was more green than blue, the color of malachite, or a crumpled dollar bill in a widow's hand. We lived so red. In the corpse blue shadow of turquoise. And the author of this was Adrian C. Lewis.
I like the, what was it? They asked the question, how do you sweep a dirt floor? They say first, later they say first, a dirt floor cannot be dirty.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how a dirt floor could be dirty.
Yeah.
Maybe if you had a lot of things that weren't dirt on it, like clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just threw all your clothes on the floor.
Yeah.
Then it could be dirty. Messy? I don't know.
It's more messy than dirty.
Yeah, because dirty implies there's dirt. And if there's supposed to be dirt, then it's not dirty. It's just dirt.
Yeah.
All right, I have one more by Joy Harjo. It's called Once the World Was Perfect. Once the world was perfect and we were happy in that world, then we took it for granted. Discontent began a small rumble in the earthly mind. Then doubt pushed through with its spiked head. And once doubt ruptured the web, all manner of demon thoughts jumped through. We destroyed the world we had been given for inspiration for life. Each stone of jealousy, each stone of fear, greed, envy, and hatred put out the light. No one was without a stone in his or her hand. there we were, right back where we had started. We were bumping into each other in the dark. And now we had no place to live, since we didn't know how to live with each other. Then one of the stumbling ones took pity on another and shared a blanket. A spark of kindness made a light. The light made an opening in the darkness. Everyone worked together to make a ladder. A Wind Clan person climbed out first into the next world, and then the other clans, the children of those clans, their children, and their children, all the way through time, to now, into this morning light, to you. That's one of my favorite poems by her. Gets a little dark for a little while, but then they find their way out.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, that makes me think of, like, adopting a cat, and they go out, and then, like, if their children gets abandoned because you don't want a pile of cats just in your house, because cats can be lazy sometimes, so, like, they would be left, and then soon they would leave, or else they get, like, a special shot, and they die.
Hmm.
But that's probably just at the adoption centers. Like, the oldest one is, like, there for a very long time. They have to do that. But they probably don't only do that to dogs, which would actually be very sad. But, like, it's still sad either way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I don't know why they do that. They could just, like, wait, and that person would, like, probably get attached still or still love that cat or dog.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we found a mama cat and some kittens on our property, and we tried to bring them to a humane society nearby, and they said that they would take the kittens and try to find new homes for them, but for the mama cat, they would just put her to sleep. So we ended up keeping her, and she was a feral cat, so she couldn't really live in the house, but she lived in our basement garage.
A feral cat was like,
area.
Isn't a feral cat like a cat that hasn't been lived with?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I knew it because I explained that earlier. And in the
often
shelter.
They're not comfortable around people.
Yeah.
So, like, this cat, she warmed up to us to the extent that we could, like, pet her. And I think my mom could pick her up and hold her. I don't think I ever did. She very rarely would come up the stairs to, like, the main part of the house. And she wouldn't go very far.
Yeah.
She would just, like, hang out by the door.
Yeah.
She was always a little skeptical of domestic life. Mm-hmm. Can't blame her.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're out of time for today. But we hope everyone has a great week. Lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Bye.
Goodbye.